You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Orr and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined alongside Shotgun Spratling. The first game of the season is in the books, and now we're moving on to Pac-12 play as USC will take on Stanford this Saturday. Shotgun, I'm excited for some Pac-12 play. Are you?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's what makes the schedule fun when USC has to play Stanford so early is that you know it matters already. It's not... Yeah. You know, UNLV is a nice little warm-up. It's tune-up. You get to see a bunch of different players. Get to see some guys get their first action, all that stuff. Oh, now we're on for real. It's for real now.
It's on. Before we get into that, as a reminder, you guys can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Audio Boom. You can also email us questions or submissions to our podcast email at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. And Chuck, we got a lot of questions and submissions.
Oh man, we better get into stuff then.
We better get into it then. Stock up.
Stock up. I'm starting with Aka Cedric Ware. I thought he was a beast. I mean, the yards after contact, I started calculating. I haven't finished. But, you know, he was just... When the first guy touched him, you knew he was at least getting three more yards, if not more. I mean, he had some yards after contact. I got in the second half where he had, you know, 12 yards after contact, 13 yards after contact. He had one, one series where he had a 12-yard run, 11-yard run, and a 3-yard run. He had 3 yards after contact, 3 yards after contact, 4 yards after contact. So went from both of those were non-first down runs to picking up first downs because he broke some tackles. He was just, he was beasting out there. I thought he looked really good, and I think that's a great sign for USC going forward. They got three guys that they trust back there. Vi Malapai played pretty well. Yeah. Stephen Carr had a big run. He had a big kickoff return as well. You know, he has the explosive ability. So I think that, with how the running back position gets banged up, I think they're still in a great position, even if a guy gets, goes down with a bum ankle or something for a week or two.
Yeah, without a doubt. It definitely seems like said reached to a new level. That's what the coaches told us over the offseason. That's what we saw during fall camp. And it's nice to see that it actually transferred over into a game. I had Mr. JT Daniels himself on stock up. I think that's a pretty obvious one. He was 22 of 35, 282 yards and a touchdown. I think he did a good job, all things considered, true freshman. I was talking to Brian Ellis, and he said the most impressive thing, though, about JT Daniels was his composure, how no matter what happened, bad or good, he came off the sideline composed, ready to attack the next play. And that's something you want from your true freshman, especially when they're about to go on the road for Stanford, Texas, and then Arizona. Those are tough games. That composure is something that you're going to want from your quarterback.
Yeah, and you saw that he is not afraid to throw the deep ball. When UNLV brought pressure, he did not check it down. He went for the home run, knowing he had one-on-one coverage out there. That was sometimes some of the issue with connecting with the receivers. He was having to get rid of the ball a little early there. Clay Helton said he forced one pass, which the pass should have been picked off. The guy dropped the interception when he locked on to Amon-Ra on a third down play. But besides that, there were two other times where he really did lock in on a receiver but didn't hurt him there. That's something he's got to watch out for going forward. But, I thought it was a great performance for a first game, as a true freshman quarterback. You look at the numbers that Matt Barkley put up, he was 14 of 19, I think it was, or 15 of 19 for 228 yards or somewhere in there. Whereas JT Daniels, they let him air it out a little bit more. And part of that was that UNLV was stacking the box and trying to attack a little bit more, I think. He was actually 21 of 35. They messed up something there. I even had to tell USC, so that might get corrected, but he might lose some percentage points on his completion percentage there. But, the fact that he threw for nearly 300 yards in his first game, I think that tells you that the kid's going to be great.
The kid's all right.
Kid is all right. I've got his compatriot.
I did too.
Amon-Ra St. Brown. Big game for him. 7 catches, 98 yards, I think it was. He had the touchdown, the 43-yard touchdown. He was really good. He actually took Michael Pittman's reps instead of those slot receiver reps that, everyone thought that he would be getting. He did play some. A limited number of plays beside Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns, but usually it was Tyler Vaughns in there with Amon-Ra filling in for Michael Pittman, and then Trayvon Sidney actually took the third receiver reps. I thought Trayvon Sidney, he's also on my list for stock up. I thought he had a really good game. you know, we know he can catch the ball. He makes the one-handed catches and stuff all the time, but it was him getting healthy. That was a big issue.
Yeah.
You know, even last year when, you know, he got his, you know, a couple of small opportunities, he'd be in for a play or two, you know, he would get a catch, you know, and he had the big catch over the middle. I got a great photo of it. You know, and one of the things that I noticed in the photo is you just see the concentration in his eyes looking the ball in. And I wanted to crop it down for Instagram, you know, but Instagram is usually a square format. And I didn't feel like it showed the whole story because when you crop it down, you lose that there's two defenders literally hanging on to him. He has one guy on his waist and one guy like grabbing onto his leg while he's in midair and still comes down with this perfect catch while concentrating on the ball. I thought he had a really good game and probably earned himself some more opportunities going forward. He actually played more snaps than Velus Jones. So we'll see how that slot position, that third receiver, kind of plays out because you got – three guys that could fill in there if you want to use Amon-Ra with Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns, or do you continue rotating, you know, guys in outside as well? So I'm curious to see how that they kind of go with that going forward. We'll find out a lot of stuff, you know, with the rotations and different things this week when you're playing Stanford. You'll find out a lot more than we did against UNLV.
Yeah, and credit to those two guys for stepping up when USC really needed them to. I think if you would have said that Tyler Vaughns would have had an off day / chemistry issues with JT, it would have been a little surprising. Same with Michael Pittman. So props to them. I mean, Amon-Ra, I've said that he always looks like he doesn't look like a freshman, and he didn't. I mean, freshman debut, and he was just out there. It was amazing. So obviously, if you play with the guys in seventh grade, you're going to have chemistry with that guy. But definitely props to them. You stole mine in Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm about to steal yours with Elijah Barrett Tucker. He played like a beast out there. It's worth noting that I attended the SSSFS, the Shotgun Spraddling School for Film Study. I think that's the right acronym. Not sure. But I went to that school Sunday, and I went and watched at least the first half with you because that took 5 hours. But you pointed out and you helped me see how Elijah Verteca was a beast when he actually subbed in. And that's someone who maybe I'm pushing for now more to get more playing time, especially him and Justin Dedich. Those two, when they got in, they were mauling guys. And I think that's a good sign for USC's O-line going forward. But how soon?
Yeah, I thought Elijah Vera Tucker was really good. I thought he was mauling dudes. I didn't necessarily, this is not to say I thought Andrew Voorhees was bad. Andrew Voorhees was okay. I didn't think he was great or bad necessarily. Same thing with several of the other linemen. I thought Clayton Bradley did really well when he came in. You know, there was multiple times when he had blocks that blocked multiple guys. He'd be blocking one guy and throw a guy into another guy, you know, that type of thing. So I thought he was good when he came in. So the two subs that they primarily used on the offensive line, they used the most, those guys had really good games there. And I think that they'll push and continue to push the guys that are starting for playing time, which I think that gives you the opportunity to use more guys, and you have bodies that you trust and guys that are playing well that are coming in on the backside. I think that's a positive for USC because, unfortunately, running backs get hurt, offensive linemen get hurt. Every year you're going to have at least one guy go down, at least for a couple weeks. So when that happens, how does USC adapt to it? I mean, they already had Toa Lobendon not be able to play the first game. So if they get him back this week, which is what we kind of expect, I expect him to be back.
I'm a little skeptical.
You're still on the fence?
I'm skeptical because, I mean, I don't want to give away too much like game strategy here, but Toa was not playing 100%. Like, Toa was not using his left arm when blocking in practice. Like, his arm was just limp. So I think Helton was a little optimistic when giving his practice report. Whether that transfers to a game, maybe Toa might just go beast mode and be like, I don't care about pain, and play through it. That could totally happen, and maybe it will. I'm just saying, he did not really use his left arm.
I will give you credit because you were on top of the Toa injury last week. So I'll give you credit on that. I guess you're paying more attention to the flowing locks than I am.
You know, us with the locks have to pay attention to those with the locks. Technically, though, I do pay attention to how Brandon Peely and Kenai Mauga put their hair up in hair in buns. They have such great hair buns that I'm like, I need to steal their technique. So maybe watch out for an interview with that. I might do a special on that.
We did see Brandon Peely yesterday since he was not fully participating. He has a wrist injury. He said he would be fine by the Stanford game. He told me after the game on Saturday against UNLV that he had an x-ray, and x-rays came back negative, but he came out a couple times in that UNLV game, so that's a concern for USC.
Yeah.
But he actually wore his hair down yesterday when he was not practicing, so it was interesting to see. His hair is pretty long, too.
The locks.
You don't really see it underneath the helmet because he has the bun. He does a really good job, you know, because his helmet actually popped off on the very first play when they had the fumble. So I actually... you know, I saw the helmet go off and I'm tracking that and I completely missed the fumble as a photographer because there was something else flying through the air. So it caught my eye first. So I was seeing him coming out. You kind of forget about the hair and everything because it's all stuffed underneath the helmet. But, you know, he's a guy that's going to be crucial this week. So more importantly than his hair bun is going to be the wrist and see how he can play this week against Stanford.
Indeed. I also had Chase McGrath on Stock Up.
Good one. I did not have him, but that's a good one.
5 for 5. I think the longest one was a 48-yarder, and that's just intense. I was a little...
That's intense?
That's an intense kick. I was a little surprised about how well he played just because I think he had a little bit of injury issues. His groin kind of plagued him through fall camp, and Helton wanted to rest him. And usually, you know, I guess I'm skeptical when it comes to injuries. So when he came out there and boomed 5 kicks... that's a good time for USC, especially if you have some red zone chemistry issues going forward. That's someone that seems to be someone you can rely on going forward.
Yeah, and he had 5 field goals, tied the school record. He said he didn't know about it until after the game. But, you know, he was happy to have that record. You know, it's kind of a bittersweet record to have because you want your team to score touchdowns. But
that's the question that Dan asked Clay Helton after the game. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that you were 5 for 5 on field goals? And Helton said it was a bad thing because they have to convert in the red zone. But, you know.
For a kicker, though, you know, he ends up with, what is he, 19 points on the game? I don't know what the school record is for points by a kicker, but that's got to be close because not only do you get the 5 field goals, but 4 extra points as well. So it was great to see. That's a good good starting point for the special teams. They were kind of up and down, so you can put them on Stock Up for some things. You can put them on Stock Down for other things.
Oh.
No, there's no such thing.
Oh.
No, there's no such thing.
Are we already getting there?
No, we're not getting
there.
We will.
Don't worry. We'll get
Anyways,
there.
I also have Brett Nealon on there. Nealon,
you know,
filling
one.
In for Toa Lobanon. We talked about Toa, but in his health. But Brett Nealon came in. I thought he played pretty well. You know, I didn't think he was exceptional. I didn't think he was bad. But the fact that a redshirt freshman, you know, has to go in and make all the calls, I thought he would, you know, that was really impressive for me there. I thought the offensive line, you know, I didn't think that they would play great with having a redshirt freshman center and a true freshman quarterback. And they played okay. So I think they did a decent enough job with what they had to do. A lot different this week when you go and face Stanford. The offensive line has to be much better to face a conference foe. But I thought for the first game they were perfectly fine. I thought Nealon did well in the middle of that line, you know, making the calls and helping protect JT Daniels.
My last stock up is a submission that we got from Alexander. And I want to talk to you about this because you and I differed before we went to our film study session. You and I differed very much on how we perceived the UNLV game. I was definitely skeptical and a little critical, and you were angry at people who were so critical. So Alexander says, stock up on USC fan angst, meaning people were criticizing that the team looked too much like last year, and he says that you mean the team that won the Pac-12. So he's saying that people should chill out a little bit. I think you're on that bandwagon too. Chill out a little bit.
I mean, it's the first game, and obviously there's going to be – they played a ton of young guys. I forgot the number, but it was like something like 25 or 30 guys made their debuts, I think. Just a ton of guys, young guys playing. They rotated a bunch. That's next on my stock up is substitutions/rotations. I mean, on the defense, the backups played 40% of the first team snaps. Last year they never played more than 17. So
– crazy.
So they showed they're going to rotate more. They use more bodies. They got a lot of guys opportunities and some playing time. They got a lot of tape to teach off of. So you take it as that. You know, it almost is like a preseason scrimmage the way they treated it. You know, it sounds bad to do that, but that's what you have to do with a non-conference game at the beginning of the season, especially if you expect a lot of young guys to play. So there's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. You're going to have a play like the fake reverse where you're going, oh, my goodness, how did that just happen? And then you go, well, there's a young guy, and he went the wrong way, and you know he yelled for everybody else to go the wrong way, basically, is what happened. You know, someone yelled reverse, and like 6 people said, okay.
Go that way.
Yeah, and like, okay, what? Where? Something shiny, where? And they ran the other way, and you know there's a wide-open lane for Lexan Thomas to run. There's a couple of those plays where they got chunk yardage, and I think they'll get that stuff cleaned up, but I think it's a good learning tape from it. I mean, talked to Kenechi Udazi yesterday, and he said that you know that's what they take away from that game. He's like, I got a lot of good learning tape to teach off of from that game. He said, I thought we did some positive things, thought we did some negative things, but a lot of good tape to teach off of. And they still got 5 sacks on the front 7 at least, so you know, I thought that overall you come away with it, you go, okay, we got the win, pulled away in the fourth quarter like you're expected to do. I mean, there's several other teams out there that were, you know, fighting for their life at the end. You look at Michigan State, you know.
UCLA lost
to Cincinnati. I mean, so to come away with the win and to come away with some positive things, I think you just got to take a step back and be like, okay, don't look too much into this game. Now this week, you have the same exact game, then you'd be happy that you got the win. But with some of the things, you'd be much more concerned about if you see a repeat of things that happen.
It's exactly what we talked about last week in the podcast when I asked you. It's the fallacy that people want rotation, but they also want USC to blow the team out. And you can't do both unless you have some crazy talent. But they're young guys, and they're going to make mistakes, and that's what we saw. So USC got the win. They got the most rotation, as you said, in Clancy Pendergast's tenure, it looks like, and that's what you want, correct? So I think the main point is calm down, everybody.
Yeah, and you know, I'm trying to find a quote here that from Clancy Pendergast from earlier in the fall. He told me that John Houston, he said one of the reasons why John Houston played so much last year is because he needed to get those reps. He said, he told me in the spring, I believe, with Levi Jones, he's like, well, I could have played Levi more, but that would have stunted the growth of John Houston. He says at some point you have to make a decision to develop one player or another, and you can't just pick one player. So I think with something like that, you get those guys in, you give them those opportunities. So now USC has, you know, all those young guys have an opportunity. They played some. Now they get an opportunity, against Stanford. And we'll see how the rotations change there. Obviously, they're going to shrink some because you're not going to play the same amount of people or the same number of reps for young guys against a conference opponent. So we'll see how things change this week. But last week, I love seeing all those young guys in and seeing the opportunities that they got.
You mentioned this already, and we're just going to go into it. Stock neutral. Bow, 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 bow.
I didn't mention anything.
You did.
And there's no such thing as stock neutral. As we found out, and as we were correctly told, this is a great point was brought up at our meet and greet.
No.
That there's a, it should be stock idle.
No.
Yes.
It doesn't have as
yes,
much
that means
a,
it didn't move. It's idle. It doesn't move.
It's neutral.
There's no, it,
excuse me.
If it doesn't go up, it doesn't go down, then it doesn't move.
You're forgetting that multiple people came up to you and told you stock neutral. I didn't even tell people to do this.
No.
I did on the podcast, but they did it.
Multiple people were wrong. I also got told on the train on the way home from the USC game.
Yeah, your imaginary friends on the train
that
told
you
that.
Is not true.
We also got emails that said it.
Thanks, Richard, for that as well.
Richard, I'm not sure you exist. But I'm going to say stock neutral for special teams. Someone emailed, they're the definition. I think Alexander emailed that. They're the definition of stock neutral. You said it yourself, up and down. They're
a roller coaster. That's not neutral.
It's neutral.
Oh,
field
so
goals,
a roller coaster
returns,
is just neutral?
Was good. But bad punts, even the good one that Reed Butterbridge had, Levi Jones, over-pursued and got the ball in the end zone. And then 10 guys on the field, not good. Not what you want.
Yeah, there were some negative things. There were some positive things. It was a roller coaster. When you're riding a roller coaster, you're going to be like, oh, this is neutral.
Stock neutral.
You're like, whoa, we're up high. Whoa, we're down low. Whoa, it's going fast. Whoa, we're going slow.
Moving on to stock down.
Anyways.
He's rolling his eyes at me.
Anti-ways.
Stock down. Who you got?
Play reps for the starters, you know, this plays in the rotations, but you know, guys like the defensive line on the starters, Malik Dorton and Brandon Peely, actually played less snaps than the backups. You know, Jay Tufele got in there. Now, Jay Tufele was technically a starter. I'm not including him in this because they used the nickel 63 out of 69 plays, so he wouldn't normally be in there, even though they started with their base quote unquote defense, which is three down linemen. So I'm counting him as a backup in this regard. So Jay Tufele got more snaps than Malik Dorton. And then Marlon Tuipulotu got more snaps than Brandon Peely. So there your starters getting less snaps. There's a couple other positions where that happened as well. So, but that was part of the rotation. You also saw that on the offensive side. Trayvon Sidney got more reps than Velus Jones as that third receiver. So you're seeing some different things, some guys getting opportunities. And I thought that, you know, with an example like Trayvon Sidney and also Jay Tufele is, ride the hot hand. If you have confidence in those and the backups are playing really well, give them an opportunity to stay in there for a little bit longer.
I'd start down for consistency on the offensive line. It seemed like everyone on the line had one play where it just wasn't good, or one play where they were, hey, they did pretty good. You know, I think consistency will be key going forward. Whether we see that is still up in the air. I'm still a skeptic, but I think that needs to be sorted out going forward.
I would pretty much agree with that.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, what's the little bit of skepticism there?
I think consistency is a big deal for them. I thought some guys were really good and, you know, some guys were just meh in the game. So I think that as a group, they need to be more consistent rather than just the individuals. I think it's just, you know, like the one play that we talked about on the live show, and we pointed out while we were watching the game or watching the film of it, is at one point they blocked two different guys, and UNLV was bringing seven guys, and I think it was the second drive. Stephen Carr gets tackled for a 3-yard loss on 3rd and 1, and he had no chance. There was two guys there.
It looked very bad visually.
Yeah, it's just there was something wrong on that play design or that blocking scheme, the communication, those type of things. And I talked to Neil Calloway this week, and he said, you know, the first couple drives, they had a lot of beats. You know, they just missed assignments. And he said, we didn't really know what we're to expect from UNLV. He said, we made adjustments, and I thought they did a good job of that. And I think after those first couple drives, the offensive line started playing better. So I think that part of it was not knowing first-year defensive coordinator for UNLV and not knowing what to expect, and then they made adjustments, and they were able to get more yardage going forward.
And to be fair, that's something that Brian Ellis said was a big factor in the game, is that UNLV's defense showed things that they've never showed on tape, and so a lot of that was adjusting to that. So I mean, people are like, oh, UNLV, that should be a cakewalk. They're still a team, and they're still someone that you'd beat.
They're
so
still breathing. But no, I know people on the P before have said, well, why do teams always show stuff new again? Why does it always seem like that's happens? Now, how do you adjust to it? I think USC adjusted really well against UNLV. Do they do that going forward? That's something.
Yeah,
I remember in the losses, you know, that was something. Well, they showed stuff we never saw. Well, how do you adjust to it? How do you make changes?
Yep.
Also on Stock Down, I got the JT to non-Amon Ra connection.
Wide receiver chemistry was Stock Down for me.
Yeah, I think that, and it was just a little off, just a tad off. You know, him and Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughn just were not connecting as best as they can. So I think that's something that'll get cleaned up after the first couple of games. We saw the same thing last year with Sam Darnold with some of the receivers. You saw that. You know, even when Sam Darnold took over, and you had Matt with Juju Smith-Schuster and Darius Rogers, it took just a little bit of time to get that connection because he's so used to playing with the practice squad guys. And so he had a really good connection with Deontay Burnett and Daniel Amorebebe and those guys. So I think it takes a little bit of time with receivers and quarterbacks, and I think that'll come.
And all Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns and JT Daniels were all asked about the wide receiver chemistry in practice this week, and they all alluded to the fact that there was 3-man rotation for a majority of preseason.
True.
And given the fact that JT came in PRPs had such a limited amount of time, you're going to have not as much chemistry as other guys. And that's what we saw. And that's something that I questioned and was skeptical about the whole time. Just going to toot my horn a little bit right there. Mm-hmm. I also had Stock Down on tight end health. Also, that was submitted by David, but I thought of it first, David. Daniel Amorebebe, we did see him do things in pads last week. This week, he was not in pads. Not at all. And it's just this thing where I think at this point, it's safe to say, just count him out rather than coming back.
Yeah, just assume he's going to be out. And then if he comes back, then be happy that he is, I guess. It's kind of where you're at right now. It's been so long that he's been out. I actually had on Stock Up that I forgot to, was Port Augustine's health.
Yeah.
Port Augustine was
the meniscus men, both.
Him and Palaye Naitiote. Porter said that when he came back from practice, he wasn't sure how it was going to react. So, you know, the fact that he was able to practice some was good last week. And then, you know, I asked him if he was on a pitch count, and he said a little bit. He said it was kind of up to him. He ended up playing 51 plays in the game, so I don't think it was much of a count. They did take him off some more. In the first half, he played 30 to 32 snaps. And one of the snaps was the 71-yard touchdown run that he did not play. So in the second half, though, he got some more breaks in there. They rotated a little bit more at his spot. But the fact that he was healthy and good to go and his knee responded fine, he's excited that he got 2 weeks. He basically gets 2 weeks of practice and game practice again before the Stanford game. He said he thinks that'll help him a lot. Have a Porter Gustin story that should be out by the time this story is up. So read that one as well.
So much content. But to finish off my Stockdown on tight end health, Josh Follow also with his hamstring continued to lag him. He wasn't in pads at all this week. He did do some rehabbing, looked a little bit better, making some cuts and running a little bit, but still not where we expect him to be there on Saturday. So that receiving tight end is not really available. And that's kind of a limits the offense in a way.
To an extent. And now Tyler Petit can obviously still catch the ball, but you saw they didn't really target the tight ends much this game. JT was much better in between the numbers, I thought, as passing the ball, but only two targets to tight ends. One of those was a 2-yard pass to Cromanhook where he should have actually not thrown it to him. And the other one was a pass interference. So, I think that getting those other two guys back would definitely benefit the middle of the field offense, and the fact that, they can create more separation than the other two guys. The other two guys are more blockers than Follow and Amora Bebe are. So we'll see how they use the tight end position go forward and if they get those guys back.
Yeah, it's a big question mark.
My last stock down, I had Christian Rector. Now, Christian Rector actually graded out as the highest rated player for USC on offense or defense in the game. He played 17 snaps, so he's basically being reverted back to where he was last year at the beginning of the year, where he's being used on third down passing situations. Any third and long, basically third and six or longer, he comes in to pass rush. When he wasn't using that, he got moved inside one time to play, more of that defensive end rather than the outside position. And UNLV ran right at him and got a big gain. So basically, you can check out my 10 things you missed. But Christian Rector basically been reverted back to just a pass rush specialist now.
Also, Connor Murphy stuck down, right?
Connor Murphy did not participate at all, first time in his USC career, because he's always been on special teams at least, as a 6'7 guy trying to block some kicks and stuff. But he did not play at all in that game.
My final stock down is actually a submission from Alexander, who said, stock down on Keeley as an alum, a USC alum. You've never been to the 9-0? Shotgun, be a good big brother and take Keeley over to the 9-0 for an after practice drink. Send me your Venmo name and I'll even pay for it. The 9-0 should be a graduation requirement at USC.
I agree with that. I completely agree with Alexander. I don't know how you never, you didn't even go on graduation day, but hey, I've never been. I might as well go, because they open up at 5 in the morning on graduation day so everybody can come in and have a drink at the very beginning.
I rolled into graduation on no sleep. I took a picture with my friends. We went to Starbucks, the one next to Levy. I have a Trenta refresher in my hand because I was like, that's the only way I'm getting through this day.
I have no clue what that means.
Yeah, you're not a Starbucks person, but I had a lot of caffeine that morning because I was tired. My last night ever in Annenberg, I spent all night there editing something and got 30 minutes of sleep under an editing bay. I worked hard in college. I'm sorry, people.
It's called work hard, play hard.
Okay, Wiz Khalifa.
That's coming out way before Wiz Khalifa. Thank you.
I know. I just wanted to call you that. Okay, heard it on the sideline. Who you got or what you got? I'm not sure.
I gotta figure out what my Venmo name. I don't even have a Venmo.
I have a Venmo. You can Venmo me.
No, because you'll take it to Starbucks or something.
Yes, please.
You started with heard it on the sideline. You got more than I do.
Okay, fine.
You were more intent on getting this one.
I made notes during the game.
Yeah, I did not.
I provide you guys the heard it on the sideline.
I was playing with new tools. Being able to Wi-Fi connect to my phone. I was trying to post pictures of key plays and stuff. So
yeah, we're on it this season.
Trying
the tag team field team.
Tag teams back again.
I don't know the actual words.
Parties in the place now. Let's begin.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. I'll do better next time. For some sure. reason, a lot of Tuesday's practice, a lot of people were asking about JT Daniels and his character. What is he like? Is he a kid? Can he still be a kid? I don't
really?
Know why.
I've never heard all this.
Yeah. For some reason, a lot of scrums were asking about that. And I was in Michael Pittman's scrum. And he was like, he's a funny guy. He's a jokester. And so someone was like, well, give us an example. And he's like, after the game, we sat down in the locker room and JT just looked at me and said, Pitt, you suck. So, yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny. For your freshman quarterback to joke with kind of a veteran wide receiver is pretty funny.
It's pretty good. I like that. Mine are not humorous. This is my transition here. This one comes from Tuesday as well.
Okay.
Before practice even began, USC is stretching. When they finish stretching, Clay Helton calls the team up. He tells them, you know, goes through like, hey, we got to be super focused this week. And he says, Stanford is the best team we're going to face this year.
That caused a little uproar on the Twitter.
Yeah, so I got a lot of people tweeting at me saying, no, you can't do that. Why would you say that? What about Texas? What about Notre Dame? What's Notre Dame going to... Texas, Tom Herman's going to put this on the bulletin board. And then it's like, I try to tell people, because I talk to, especially baseball coaches, I talk to the coaches all the time. You know, I hear this complaint a lot. The coaches say you have to motivate players in different ways all the time. And I think that's just what this is, but people freaked out about it, it felt like. So I think it's just completely a motivational tactic that, you know, you want to, you know, have the players, you know, have something to get them super focused. So I think that's something they were doing here. I don't think it was necessarily a slight at every other team, but yeah, that's what Helton said on Tuesday.
I had, if we're going to go back to the stretching motif, after Wednesday's practice, after they huddled up and stretched, usually they have some type of cheer, and Wednesday's cheer was chop those trees. So they're chopping. They're going to try and chop.
Nothing's as good as the GIF of Marquise Lee and GIF. Robert Woods.
That's one of my favorite GIFs every year. People think that it's Juju and Adoree, and it's not.
No, chopping down the goalpost, and then instead, I think Robert comes over and he has the mimes that he has a chainsaw to help chop it down.
Always a good one. What else are you at?
I got Brandon Peely. I talked to him after the game, like I said, about his wrist and everything. But then I asked Jay Toffoli about, what's it like facing Stanford? Are you excited about that? And they're like, yeah, both of them were super excited. You know, you're facing a team that likes to run the ball, a power running team. So it's a big game for nose tackles, defensive tackles. So they're excited about it. Brandon Peely said, you know, we got something special for Stanford. So I'm assuming that he's talking about the different packages they'll use, the heavy packages. You know, you may even see, I know Dan alluded to it, having all three of the Polynesian guys in there together, side by side by side, with Marlon Tuipulotu, Brandon Peely, and Jay Toffoli. That's a very nice front line for USC to have as all second-year guys. I mean, that's going to be a good group that's going to carry that defensive line forward. I also asked KU about it. I said, you know, your guys said that they're looking forward. I said, do you look forward to it? He's like, you know, if I was putting on the shoulder pads, if I was strapping on the helmet, lacing it up, he's like, yeah, I would be. But for me, it's just another game. You know, I just got to teach the guys up and make sure that they're ready for it, ready to go.
I actually talked to Brian Ellis this week. I'm saying this a lot, but it was an interesting conversation. And you pointed out to me on the sideline about how Ellis is actually on the sideline this year. And so I talked about that, and he was actually pretty animated about it. He said he loves it. He loves being on the sideline with JT. It's a Clayism where he loves looking in the eyes and seeing how they're like recepting the game and how they're feeling about it. But the interesting part is that he said if Sam had returned for another year, he would have been still in the box. But he said he purposely went down to the field just for JT and to make sure that he can handle the game and he can give real-time adjustments to JT and have more of a feel on the field with JT. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, right? I think the thing with looking them in the eyes and telling, I think that tells a lot. I mean, they obviously your offense coordinator calls down on the sideline, you talk on the phone type of thing. But seeing how they're processing the information when you're talking about certain things, I think that's huge, especially at the quarterback position. I would probably always have my quarterback coach on the field or whoever is working with, you know, not always the quarterback coach is the guy that's really talking to him, sometimes the offensive coordinator, whatever it is. I would, if possible, I would have that guy on the sideline so you could, you know, really get a feel for what they're doing. That in the same with some defensive positions, your middle linebackers, I want them to be able to talk with, you know, the people to see the processing stuff because they're, you know, they're the, you know, the leader of the defense, the leader of the offense, the person that's getting the play calls, those type of things. So I think you need to have that type of connection. So I think that's really good that he's down there to help out JT in that. I wonder if it'll change, if they feel like JT is, you know, is confident enough and you know, later in the season or even next year, do they make a switch and move someone up to the box then, or, you know, does it stay the same?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Technically, Drevno was up there. I was asking, so who switched? And he said, well, Drevno's up there. But not to be all conspiracy theory and regress to last season, but the fact that he would have been in the box if Sam returned, I think Sam still needed someone on the field with him. That was a complaint that we had last year, and I think that was needed. I mean, like, yeah, Sam's a veteran, but he still needed someone on the field with him. I don't know. Just saying. Moving on to our next topic.
Segment?
Segment, that's the word. Agree, disagree. Are you ready?
Sure.
USC should.
Always like disagreeing with you.
USC should load the box and sell out to stop the run and Bryce Love.
Yeah, I think that you have to start with stopping Bryce Love, and then you take your chances on the outside with those big receivers. Now, that puts you in a precipitous situation, I guess.
Is it going to rain?
I don't even know if that's the right word. Whatever. Puts you in a dangerous situation. That's what I'm looking for. Dangerous situation because those wide receivers can go up and make plays, and you can give up chunk plays in a hurry with it. Like you saw Arcega Whiteside, he had 6 catches for over 220 yards and 3 touchdowns. So that's a pretty good average right there.
Good.
Almost 40 yards a play. So, you know, you can give up big play yardage like that if you sell out to stop the run. But I think Bryce Love can hurt you so much more. And Clay Helton talked about how third down efficiency is going to be key. First and second down efficiency to keep them out of third and shorts. So if you sell out to stop the run and you keep them in third and 6, you know, then you can change the defense and try to stop the wide receivers. But I think first you got to stop Bryce Love. Anytime a team has a Heisman finalist or a serious Heisman contender, that's the guy you probably should stop first.
Maybe. Yeah.
Unless you want to help his Heisman contention.
I mean, USC definitely tried to do that with Christian McCaffrey. But,
that's for sure.
In the same vein, this will be a breakout game for Emon Marshall, a la Chris Brown in USC's first game against Stanford last year.
Chris Brown had a really good game against Stanford last year. I don't know that it was a breakout game for him.
Okay. I don't know if breakout is the right terminology, but
big game.
Big game. National talking heads are like, ooh, Emon Marshall, blah, 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 you know, where they're just now paying attention.
This is a big game for Emon Marshall, I think, going forward because, you know, he can show that he can defend the bigger guys and kind of shut them down, which is something he would be asked to do at the next level. So I think with Arcega Whiteside being a big target, I think, especially if they shadow him, I would shadow Emon Marshall on Arcega Whiteside just because I think that's their number one receiving target. Now, the other guys are still big, but I just think he presents more of a problem for defensive backs than some of the other guys do. Than your Colby Parkinson in the tight end and Caden Smith and with Trent Irwin on the other side. I think that you let Emon Marshall stick with JJ Arcega-Whiteside, and I think that'll be a really fun matchup to watch. And I think Emon Marshall will show the development he's had from last year to this year in this game.
I'm gonna go all pair style on you right now. Elijah Vera Tucker should have a starting spot.
That's tough. I thought he was really good. I think if he shows the same thing, I think this is a game where maybe he pushes, the rotation pushes towards him a little bit more. And if he's mauling again in this game like he was last game, then he's the one and you kind of play the hot hand and he takes over the spot potentially as the game progresses if he has a really good game and Andrew Voorhees is not great. Because like I said, I didn't think Andrew Voorhees was bad. I just didn't think he was great. And I thought Vera Tucker was really good.
Thus, if you had to choose one, who would you choose?
I start right now, I still go with Andrew Voorhees. I mean, he's the guy that's got the experience and stuff, and you're going up against a team like Stanford. He's played against Stanford before. However, like I said, if in the game you see that one of them's playing, you know, Vera Tucker, you're subbing him in, and he's playing really well and playing better than other guys, then that's when I would make the transition and play the hot hand towards the end of the game. And then also, Voorhees has the versatility where he's played some right tackle in practice this week. You can move him around if you decide that someone else is not playing as well as both of those guys are.
Stanford is USC's most active rival currently. Rivalry.
Agree or disagree? Yeah. Oh, that's a tough one. That's a good agree or disagree. I'll give you some props. Thank you. I think Notre Dame is still more. I think the Stanford one has always been a close game in the last, I don't know, 8-10 years.
Yeah.
So that makes it really passionate. But also you play so early in the year where there's a lot on the line, but obviously it's not the end-all, tell-all, end-all, be-all game. It doesn't decide how everything's going to be. It decides a lot in the South as far as positioning there. However, I think Notre Dame, the history of that rivalry, and then just UCLA, it's such a unique rivalry that it's crosstown. There's so few that are anything like it in college football. You know, all your big rivalries are across state lines for the most part or a good drive away. I mean, Georgia Tech's 45 minutes away. Auburn, Alabama, I think, is like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Florida State's a good distance. You know, none of those are, hey, I work beside that person next to me. I know he's a UCLA fan. I can't wait till we beat them so I can talk trash to him at work
but
the next
like,
day.
But what I'm saying is I don't think that's had as much weight as it had in the past couple of years. You know, I think USC fans are kind of like, check, yeah, USC is gonna UCLA is gonna be a win. You know, it hasn't had that fire to it.
Well, I mean, what was it? 3 years ago, they lost three in a row. Barkley gets destroyed by Anthony Barr. I mean, it's not too long ago that was happening.
I was there at that game, too, yeah.
I was, too. I was in the stands, and it was raining.
I was, too. I got hot cocoa after the game.
Oh, nice. but I think Notre Dame is still more. Even though there's been pretty lopsided both ways back and forth, I think that
really
fuels the fire for both teams because USC beats the crap out of them in the rain here. They go up there last year and get destroyed. So I think that, you know, because when you lose a game, it's a hard-fought battle. Man, we lost. It was a great game. Dang it, we got to win next time. You lose a loss, and you're getting blown out, and you're getting embarrassed on national TV, and everybody had been talking it up all week, and you're like,
yeah,
you don't want to show your face. You want to go, and that. So next time, you want to go. We got to prove ourselves maybe this time.
So rank them. So you think it's Notre Dame.
Right now, I would say Stanford, and then UCLA. But just overall, the UCLA rivalry is so unique that it's hard not to.
It's lacked a punch recently, I feel like. Notre Dame, I feel like, is weird because I feel like their powers get zapped when they come to California. And then, like, the same thing happens to USC, vice versa. And so it's like, yeah, it's a rivalry. But I only feel it when we actually go to Notre Dame. It's like you can feel the crowd and it's hostile. So then it's like, okay, this is actually a rivalry versus when they come out here, it's like, oh, here's another game. I don't know. It's weird. But I feel like Stanford has been so close. It decides things.
Stanford has obviously had the best games.
Yes. And I think that plays a huge role in rivalries.
Yeah. You just assume that every game. I mean, when USC won, 14 or something last year or even 18, that first game, 42-24, 28, you know, you're like, wow, that's a huge blowout. Because it wasn't a three-point game like everything else has seemed to be. Yeah. I mean, last year in the Pac-12 championship, obviously you have the play at the goal line with Uchenna Nwosu. Yeah. Was he even down? You know, they blew the whistle. So there are a lot of things. And then obviously USC kind of finished that one off. But you know, the rivalry has been really good, especially that they played for Pac-12 championships the last couple of years. I think that adds an extra bonus when you're playing twice in a year.
Without a doubt. We have a submission from Jackson, our buddy, who has emailed us a lot, and we'll get to his questions later. He says, will JT Daniels throw 3 touchdown passes against Stanford? Agree, disagree?
Ooh, 3 touchdowns.
Throwing 3. Part of me feels like this could just be the game that like they just let JT throw, and it's like, oh, okay, he can throw.
No, because I don't like that.
I want that to happen. I don't know if that will actually happen.
I mean, last year in the first game, Ronald Jones ran for 2. Sam Donald threw for 4. Yes.
That's not... the segment is called Agree, Disagree.
Yes, he will.
Agree?
I guess.
Okay, we'll see. We have a submission from Mike in Irvine who says, Stanford's Bryce Love will rush for 150 plus yards against USC this weekend.
I'm going to go with, oh, that's tough because he ran for 160 the first game last year. I think he ran for 125 the second game, and that was considered a win. So he only ran for 28 last week, though.
I know.
But that offensive line is better than it was last year, I think. I'm going to say yes. It's going to be like, it's going to be between 130 and 160.
The segment is called Agree, Disagree. You got to respond.
Yes. Yes.
Awful.
Agree.
Thanks for you guys submitting that. You made Shotgun really constrained in his face. He was struggling.
I don't hear you agreeing or disagreeing with anything.
You didn't give me an opportunity.
That's what I thought.
I think agree JT will throw for 3. Disagree, Bryce Love will be under 150.
Actually, I'm going to disagree with JT throwing for 3. I think he gets 2, 1 for Aka Cedric, 1 for one of the other backs. Bam.
Bam, bam.
Though I also said that they would lose 28-23 on the previous show. So maybe they win 31-28. Very conflicted about this game.
So am I. We'll get to that. Questions segment. What should USC fans / the world take away from the outcome of this game, Stanford game?
What should they take away? It's not going to tell you how the entire season's going to go.
But they love doing it.
I know this is one of your
the hills I will die on.
If you want to call it that. I was going to say one of your favorite topics to complain about.
I complain about a lot, so we'll see.
But it this year on the USC beat, there's a lot of new reporters and stuff, and it's the question a lot of them asked yesterday. Oh, what does this mean for the outcome of the whole season? It doesn't because of how we've seen in the past where this game tells us something, but not everything. We think that USC is going to be a big rushing team after destroying Stanford last year. Oh, you went up against that tough physical defense. That's what they like to do. And you ran for 300 yards on them in the first game last year. Didn't tell us anything. No. Didn't tell us that they were going to be a rushing attack. You know, it told us that Ronald Jones is good. Stephen Carr is good. Both of those guys ran for 100 yards. And then Stephen Carr didn't do too much after the Texas game. So, or actually take that back, after the Cal game. You know, he got nicked up and, you know, didn't really perform at the same level. So we didn't see that same thing. So it tells us a little bit about the Pac-12 South and the direction the Pac-12 South is going that year. But about the team itself, because Stanford is so different than every other team, it doesn't tell you everything. Because USC could say, hey, we're going to become the most, we're going to become the team that can stop any physical rushing attack. And they beat Stanford. They blow out Stanford. And then they can't stop a spread attack, and you go 3-9 on the season. Does that tell you about the season because of the Stanford game? No. It's such a unique team that I don't think it tells you a lot about the team in that regard.
Just thinking about the fan reaction to a 3-9 season just made my stomach go like,
huh! Yeah, that's
just
not going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
A very, very hypothetical that I, yeah.
Good. So everybody calm down. Did your opinion of USC's September outcome change after seeing how the rest of USC's opponents fared over the first week?
Someone brought up this question, and I think that's a very good question. You know, I've said previously I thought they were going to be 3-2, and I think I'm still holding to that. Yeah. Even though Stanford didn't play great, you know, they were down 7-2 nearly at halftime. You know, Texas loses to Maryland again. Arizona was the big shocker. It was just like, wow. I couldn't believe that they, you know, lost like that to BYU. Khalil Tate was 6 for 6 to start the game, and then it was something like 14 for very bad. And so I was very surprised by that team. I don't know if they turn the question is, do they turn it around? If they don't turn it around, then I don't, because I thought USC was split between Stanford and Texas and then split between Washington State and Arizona. And obviously, Arizona expected to be a much better team than Washington State this year, so it's kind of playing under that. So I think now you're looking more at 4-1 this year, but I still think, or 4-1 this month, but I still think USC splits between Stanford and Texas.
Interesting.
Now, if they lose both,
you're wrong. Finally, our buddy Jackson, who gave us a lot of questions last week, he followed up. He was right with the Vavai first touchdown. We were wrong.
Nailed it.
But
nailed
it. We did get the first sack was for Port Augustine, so well done to us. Claps for us. And then you were correct with 38 rushes on point.
Wow, wow.
Well done. Look at you. So he has new questions for us today, this week. What are we looking forward to most in this game?
The play in the trenches. I mean, it always comes down to that with this team. And whichever team rushes for more yards usually wins this game. So I'm looking at the play in the trenches, looking to see, you know, if they can open up some holes for Sed and Carr and Vi. And can USC shut down Bryce Love? They haven't really done it the last two times. I mean, he's been the guy that's hurt them, and they couldn't throw the ball. But KJ Costello is going to throw the ball a little better than Keller Christ did at the beginning of last year. So
yeah.
I think it's much more of a threat there. Port Augustine even told me that. He said basically, you know, before they've always been a good rushing team, but now it's kind of double. You have to prepare for both pass and rush. So I think that puts more emphasis on also those outside linebackers, you know, holding the edge but also getting to the quarterback. You know, they're going to be – you know, especially if it's a play action, they're going to be holding their ground to begin with, but can they get to the quarterback and affect him? I know Clancy wants to do that every time that he can with a, you know, a younger quarterback, and KJ Costello is still a young guy, even though he played a lot last season.
I think just to the game in general, it's always a physical, close game, and I think I'm looking forward to that. Also looking forward to the wide receivers said a lot this week that they worked hard on creating more chemistry with JT Daniels, so I'm curious if that paid off. Also, if JT Daniels is a little bit more comfortable this week, having one game under his belt, just seeing how JT will do. I'm just curious about that kid, just watching him.
Did they say how they built more chemistry? It was a pizza party, they go to Chuck E. Cheese, and what happened?
Pizza party. No, they worked on deep balls a lot.
Pajama party?
They both practices, they threw more after practice. Pizza party, all that good stuff.
Sleepover, you know.
Sleepover.
Gotta get good chemistry with your friend. Also, the St. Brown versus St. Brown.
Oh, that too.
Osiris versus Amon Ra. Great names.
Great names.
Good job, John.
Finally, what are we least looking forward to in this game?
We've had this question before, and I'm just like, I don't get it. It's college football. I'm always looking college forward. Football.
No, this is the one game where it's applicable for me. You know why?
Didn't you say the same thing last year? Isn't this the same exact question? Did you just put this one on there yourself?
I will show you the email. I did not do this.
Because you don't like going to the farm? You don't like going to Stanford or something? What, no. What is?
Would you just let me speak and then maybe you know my answer? I dislike the Stanford band. It's the only thing that I like really dislike. They're just so like noisy cacophonous, if that's the word. It just, it just hurts my ears.
Cacophonous.
Whatever, same thing.
I don't pay attention to the bands, really.
I hear
it. I hear them and I dance along. Shotgun. I hear stuff and dance along, but I don't ever pay attention to them.
That's true, because you didn't even hear at Notre Dame all the cool songs they played, and you were like, I don't hear anything.
I'm just dancing along. I don't know.
Oh, weird. I don't understand you. Score predictions? What do you think? You said this on the live show. But
I said 20-23 on the live show that USC would lose, but it could easily be 31-20. For some reason, I just have Stanford pegged for 28 points. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know why.
Who wins?
Well, if it's 31-28, then it's USC. If they don't score that touchdown, it's 28-23. They got a two-point conversion, too.
What?
That's a big non-answer to your answer there.
Yeah, come on now.
Did you answer my non-answer with a non-answer answer? Exactly.
Shotgun, who wins?
I just told you.
Who?
I just told you twice.
No, you didn't.
Once, twice.
Say clearly for the people.
28 points for Stanford.
And what is USC score?
Either 23 or 31.
You're the worst. Come on.
That's it.
No, I hate you.
I'm done.
I'm going to say 21-17. I think Chase McGrath. Game-winning field goal. I'm totally making this up, but I don't know if I believe it.
If it's 21-17, it wouldn't be a game-winning field goal.
That's true. I hate football scores. 24-21.
I like this football thing, but I don't understand their scoring at all. It's just 7 points.
I hate math on the fly. That's the real problem. Journalism major over here.
So who was the, wasn't it an Auburn coach who hated math on the fly too? Or no, Les Miles hated math on the fly. Cause
I'm in good company.
He was not being able to figure it out.
Alrighty.
Should we go for two? I don't know. Should we go for two every time?
Thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast. We got some emails that people are going to listen to this on the drive up to Stanford. So I hope you guys are seeing some scenery if you're taking the PCH or if you're taking 5 the way
up. If you have time, take the PCH. Great drive.
It's a great drive. You got to do it at least once.
Great drive. I did it all the way up to Canada. So I highly recommend it.
Also, we mentioned this earlier, but thanks to everyone who saw us at the meet and greet. We like seeing faces to the Twitter handles and the email. So we appreciate it. Someone emailed me, Go Angels, facetiously. Go Angels.
Oh, wow.
Shohei. That makes me sad.
Hurts. Still hit two homers.
I know.
Thanks, Richard, for saying hello on the train, even though Keely doesn't believe
you're
real.
You're an imaginary friend. Let's go wrap it up. We'll be back on the live show on Sunday. We'll be back on the live show Thursday and a podcast. So much content. Just stay tuned for that.
Killing it.
We'll see you guys next week.
Adios. Peace.